So it's close enough to Hanukkah, it's ready. We're ready in the month of Kislev, so it's legitimate to talk about Hanukkah. I always had a soft spot for the Torah of Hanukkah. When I was above in Yeshiva, Hanukkah was the one that fell out in the middle of the Zman. It was a lot of, we talk and learning the whole Hanukkah through every night. I would go to a cousin, we would talk and learning about the sugyas. So I have in a way that wasn't true about Eliyahu ben Tobin, which was more or less been a Zman. I mean, from Purim, the Zman was practically over. Anyway, there's a lot about Hanukkah, but I want to talk one facet of Hanukkah, and that is the concept that we have almost uniquely by Hanukkah of Hidur Mitzvah. Now, we have a concept by all mitzvahs. The Gemara says that this, in general, is an imperative of Hidur Mitzvah. The Gemara derives it from the Pasuk that came with the Anbeu. The Gemara says, Hisnoel lefonot v'mitzvahs, that we try to do mitzvahs in a beautiful way. Like his examples, so the Torah should be beautiful, and the Tao should be beautiful. Whatever mitzvah we do, we try to do it in the most attractive way possible. And yet, when it comes to Hanukkah, we have a kind of concept of Hidur that transcends the general parameters of Hidur. Because Hanukkah, the halacha is that Ner Hanukkah, the bedrock mitzvah of Hanukkah, is Ner Ish Ubeisai, one candle per household. Every night, one candle per house. Then Hamahadrin, somebody wants to do the mitzvah more beautifully, so it's Ner L'Kol Echad Echad, and every person in the house should have their own Ner. And Hamahadrin Minimahadrin, somebody wants to make it more beautiful than that, so he adds a light for every day. The first night is one Ner, the second night is two Ners, and so on. So that by the time you get to the end, if you have a large household, the number of Ners that one lights because of the concept of Hidur will be dozens of times more than the bedrock mitzvah would have required. You don't find it by any other mitzvah. And it's different than other mitzvahs in two ways. First of all, by other mitzvahs, Chazal just spoke generally, make the mitzvah beautiful, but they didn't give any special prescription of doing the mitzvah differently. No, you should take a nice lulav, but they never said if you want to really be ma'ad of the mitzvah, you should take two lulav, 12 lulav, 24 lulav, that they never suggested. Should be as nice, you should find a nice lulav. And here, they actually gave you a different way to do the mitzvah in order to make it more beautiful, more of a pageant. And moreover, the halacha is that behidur mitzvah ad shlish, that the imperative of behidur mitzvah only requires that you spend a third more for a nice sefer Torah, let's say, than you would have spent on an ordinary sefer Torah. Not more than that, the halacha doesn't even suggest. And their Hanukkah, behidur mitzvah is many times more expensive, many times more effort. So it seems that when it comes to Hanukkah, this concept of making the mitzvah more beautiful, Chazal built it in. Other mitzvahs, it's a nice prescription. But here they built it in to the halachas of the mitzvah itself, that the mitzvah should be done in a beautiful way. And I want to explore that. I want to explore it down two different avenues. How we could understand what is the special connection between Hidur and Hanukkah. The first approach, which I think has a lot to recommend it, is the following note. Chazal say, Noach said to his son Yefes, Yovan is a descendant of Yefes, Yafta lekim leYefes v'yishkoin ba'ol leShem. Hashem should do beautifully by Yefes, and Yefes should dwell in the tents of Shem. So Rashi brings the Chazal, Yaf Yefusoi shel Yefes ba'ol leShem. The beauty of Yefes should dwell in the tents of Shem. What does that mean? What's this notion that the beauty of Yefes should be in the tents of Shem? So the simple meaning, certainly this is a part of the meaning, is the Gemara says that there's a special dispensation, special status to a Torah that's translated into Greek. Greek, the Gemara says, is the most beautiful. Chazal says it was the most beautiful language. Even today, people who know Greek well say that ancient Greek was a very beautiful language. I can't vouch for it personally, but that's what they say. And a musical language, supposedly. So there's a halacha it's more a sefer Torah that was translated into Greek. It has practical ramifications. A sefer Torah that was translated into Greek has a greater degree of kedusha than it was translated to other languages. There's a special notion that Greek is an appropriate language into which to translate the Torah. It's debated in the Gemara among Chazal, but in any event, there is such a notion. So that's a way that the beauty of Yefes can somehow be wedded to the Torah of Shem. But I think it's really much broader than that, and Chazal here are expressing an idea that's broader than just, you know, Greek's a nice language and a musical language. Greece and beauty are in the imagination of mankind, they're inextricably linked. You know, was it Keats that wrote the poem to a Greek vase? A thing of beauty is a joy forever, I'm misquoting. But you know, the Greek, the aesthetics of Greek, of Greece, and the beauty of Greece is a historical phenomenon. We have now from archaeology, we have architects, we have artifacts from all kinds of ancient cultures. If we look at artifacts from ancient Babylon or South America or any ancient culture, and it feels, we don't feel any kinship with it. It feels very foreign, primitive, different planet. Look at the ziggurats from Babylonia or even literature, you know, ancient Greek inscriptions and so on. So it's interesting, it's historical, it's interesting historically, but it doesn't speak to us in any way. We don't feel any connection with it. It certainly doesn't take our breath away. And all of a sudden you come to ancient Greece, and it's like, you know, a black and white movie all of a sudden became color. And you have all this, you have suddenly sculpture that's to us, strikes us as a model of beauty. And questionable whether our sculpture can surpass, you know, even the sculpture of the Renaissance was just trying to be like Greece. And Greek literature is performed till today. Greek literature is read today for pleasure. Homer and the Greek tragedians and the Greek historians. It's a real literature that people actually learn, not just because they act. People read to enjoy. Greece was a spectacularly beautiful culture. There's spectacularly attractive kind of culture. And that's why when we faced, when we came into contact with Hellenistic culture, that was really the first time, it was something unprecedented for us, and that was the first time we had this phenomenon of Jews assimilating into a different culture. And that was something new. We'd been oppressed in the past, but that there should have been a danger of the Jewish people assimilating into a different culture, that was something new, and it's because of this allure and beauty for which Greece was justly famous. What's just a poet, a famous 20th century poet, I don't remember which one it was. It was a big anti-Semite also, but it's not really relevant to the quote. But they asked this, who was the poet? I forgot his name. They asked him, you know, how could one find, where could you find the essence of poetry? If you distill the tamsis dumla of poetry. So he said, well, if you learn Greek well, and you read Homer, that's all the poetry is encapsulated in that. It's especially a beautiful kind of culture. And that's what we faced, and for us that was a danger, because it was so beautiful, so attractive, and so enticing, that it could have swept us entirely away. And the thing that Chazal is saying, but it's not by this idea of Yafifusi Shol Yefes Ba'ol Hashem, is that faced with such a phenomenon, there's two approaches that we could take. We could say that we're going to turn our back on the notion of beauty altogether. If it's so alluring, then we just have to reject that whole idea. Chazal here are telling us that actually the ideal is not to deny the role of beauty and of aesthetics, but rather understand that beauty has to be redeemed. That a culture that just worships beauty, if it's not redeemed by some moral framework, so then it just becomes, eventually degenerates into a pursuit of unbridled pleasure, and it becomes degenerate. And of course that's what happened in the case of Greece. Greece was a very degenerate culture. Even the Romans despised the Greeks for their degeneracy. But that's a danger altogether. But if that can be bound in some kind of framework, you know, if you can find a place in a moral framework, then it can be something that's enhancing and ennobling and has value. As I said, you have the role of Yafifusi Shol Yefes. If the Yafi of Yefes just stands by itself and doesn't have any framework, then it's just a one-way street into just pursuit of pleasure. But if it can find a home in Ohel Hashem, and I think the metaphor of Ohel Hashem is a very appropriate metaphor, because an Ohel is a house. A house is a setting. If that beauty confines a home in a setting, in a framework of moral values, and if a way can be found, that all of that beauty, all of that hiddur can enhance Avodas Hashem, then beauty itself is redeemed, and is brought into the orbit of Avodas Hashem, and it finds purpose and fulfillment. Therefore, in the commemoration of the Nes of Chanukah, we met head on, we clashed with Greek culture, which threatened to swamp us, and we were able to withstand that and to be victorious and to reestablish our independence. So it was a special role. They put a special emphasis on doing the mitzvah in a beautiful way, and being mahad of the mitzvah, and transforming the mitzvah. The mitzvah should be totally transformed by Hiddur Mitzvah, as if to say, all of this beauty that we encountered, it is very beautiful, and if that can be brought into a mitzvah, if it can be brought into a sensibility of mitzvah and avodas Hashem, then it's positive. But if it doesn't have that framework, then it's unredeemed, and then it's something that has to be resisted. So I think that speaks to us very much today also. We live in a culture that's heir to Greek culture, that has many beauties to offer. That's valuable if it can be wedded to a framework of moral values. But if it becomes something that just justifies itself and doesn't have any restraint around it or any purpose that's given to it, except that truth is beauty and beauty is truth, and that's all it is. It's just a goal in itself. Then it's something that's a value that's antithetical to our value. But if the hiddur and the yofi can be wedded to the mitzvah, then it's something that's and then it's something that enhances the mitzvah and enhances Avodas Hashem, and that's really something that's very positive and transformative. I think that's one way to understand why Hiddur Mitzvah plays such a role in the commemoration of Chanukah. I want to suggest a different direction as well, take it in a different direction altogether. These don't have to contradict each other, but maybe there's another reason why Ner Chanukah has this special notion of Hiddur Mitzvah that should be done in a beautiful way. And I'll start with the following. We know the mitzvah of Chanukah is to light, ideally to light by the doorway there at Yisrael. Of course, that's the light outside by the doorway. That's the way the mitzvah is ideally supposed to be done. Chustarets, for the most part, we don't light by the doorway. We light by the window or in the house. But in any event, it's at home. The mitzvah of Chanukah is to be lit at home or just outside the home. The universal minhag is, and in addition, we light Chanukah in shul. But that is not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. Where did that come from? What's the source? In Chazal, as far as we know, as far as I know, there's anywhere such a notion of lighting Ner Chanukah in shul. It's put down in Shulchan Aruch. It's an old minhag, but it's not in Chazal. So where does it come from? So the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch suggests that it's based on the model of something that does say in the literature of Chazal, which is that Pesach night, at the night of the Seder, we say Hallel by the Seder. But in addition, it says in Masechah Sofrim, which is a Braisa, that one should say Hallel in Shul. Of course, many communities have that minhag. That was the minhag in Eretz Yisrael. Then in antiquity, many communities have that minhag, that they say Hallel in Shul, very often with a bracha, some without a bracha, but they say Hallel in Shul before going home to have the Seder. And what's the reason for that? Says this Braisa, Masechah Sofrim, that you have to say Hallel, of course, by the Seder. We're commemorating the Nes of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's the night of the Gula. But in addition, Mitzvah min ha-Muvchor, that it's best to say Hallel in Shul, in the Ima, melodiously. But Kayim Mashenemar, in order to fulfill the idea of Umiroi Mimos Shemoy Yachdov, that we praise the Ribbono Shelom together. Meaning, we're going to go home and have a Seder, each family on its own. Each family is going to say Hallel just as a family. It's a special idea that the community as a whole, and by extension, Klal Yisrael as a whole, should say Hallel together. Says the Vilna Gaon that that's the model, that's the paradigm for lighting their Chanukah. Just like it says in this Braisa, that besides the Hallel we say at home, we also say Hallel together in Shul in order to have Hallel should be sung together. The whole community should sing it together. So says the Vilna Gaon that therefore when it comes to Ner Chanukah, we follow the same template, and besides the Ner Chanukah that we light at home, we also light Ner Chanukah in Shul in order to fulfill this notion of Neroimim Shemay Yachdom. That's what the Vilna Gaon says in a few short words on the Shulchan Aruch, probably not more than a dozen words. The obvious question is, what in the world does one thing have to do with the other? Hallel is Hallel, and there's a special idea by Hallel in the Roman Mishmayachta. We should say Hallel together, we should sing Hallel together, the Oimu B'Ne'imo. What does that do with Nechanukah? Nechanukah is a mitzvah. There are lots of mitzvahs that we do at home, we do privately, and there's no particular idea that we have to do it again, or we have to do it an additional time together as a community. What the Goyim's telling us, what we can see from this Goyim, and I'm not the first person to make this point, is that the Goyim, the Vilna Goyim, apparently understood that Ner Chanukah is a form of Hallel. It's not a verbal Hallel, but in its essence, Ner Chanukah is a kind of Hallel. Because what is Hallel? Hallel is something happened that's great, we want to celebrate it, we want to commemorate it, it fills us with joy, there was this nice, we went out of triumph, and we added Gula, so we sing, we break out and song. And that's Hallel. Well, what is Ner, and by saying Hallel, we proclaim that we had this miracle. Well, what is Ner Chanukah? Ner Chanukah is that we had a Neis Gadol, we had the miracle of Chanukah, and now by lighting the Neis, everybody should see, we are publicizing, proclaiming, celebrating the fact that we had this Neis. So it's a kind of non-verbal, Ner Chanukah is a kind of non-verbal Hallel. And therefore, just as by Hallel itself, by the conventional Hallel, there's a notion of a Reim Meshmei Achdom, that besides saying Hallel as a family, the community should say Hallel together because of the pasuk of a Reim Meshmei Achdom. Says the Goyim that that's the model for Ner Chanukah as well, besides having Ner Chanukah, which is this kind of Hallel. It's a pantomime Hallel, it's a Shereda, but it's a Hallel. But besides having the Hallel at home, we should have a Hallel in Shul with the community. Everybody's together, and we'll light Ner Chanukah together, and say the Brocha and so on, in order to have Uneroim Meshmei Achdom. That's a very, I think it's a very seminal idea that a Hallel does not have to be verbal. There are instances of Hallel that are done with through action. Ner Chanukah, of course, is the example that's in front of us. And maybe there are other such examples, maybe Hallel Kaisos. There could be other examples of mitzvahs of Pesumi Niso, where it's a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah act, but in its essence, it's really a kind of Hallel. That being the case, so then we can take that a step further. Because when it comes to Hallel, there's a special idea. It says in the Brach, so the language of the Brach that I quoted you before, was mitzvah minam mufchor, B'ne'imo means with a melody, melodiously. Halal is halacha, not just something that Chazonim do because that's what Chazonim do. But there's actually a halacha, there's a halacha that halal is supposed to be sung and supposed to be melodious because it's a shira. Halal is a shira, it's called shira even in halacha. And the shira should be ideally, you didn't sing it, but ideally, the best way to say halal is to say halal in song, to say halal in a way that's melodious and it's an outpouring, therefore it's an outpouring of feeling. So let's put that together. If halal has to be done melodiously, and if Ner Chanukah is a form, a non-verbal form of halal, then it follows that Ner Chanukah should be done melodiously. Well, how do you have a melodious Ner Chanukah? What could one have in a Ner Chanukah that would be analogous to music in a verbal Hallel? Well, what could there be in the midst of Ner Chanukah that would correspond to the concept of Ne'imo that we have by the verbal Hallel? So what would you say? That's what corresponds? You know, the Hallel has to be beautiful. It has to be melodious. It's beautiful Nigunim. So Ner Chanukah can't, what do you have, a musical menorah? What, how can you make a Ner Chanukah melodious? What's the equivalent thing to being melodious? I'm sure he's too shy to say it. What's the equivalent thing? It should be beautiful. It should be mehudar. Beauty in a Ner, in a menorah, is the equivalent of melodious in a halal. So therefore, I want to suggest that that's why when it comes to Ner Chanukah, there's a special concept of hidden mitzvah over and above what you have by every mitzvah. Every mitzvah, there's a certain degree of. Every mitzvah, in a way, is an expression of praise to the Rebbeinu Shalom. And therefore, every mitzvah has a sort of general notion of hiddur attached to it. We try to do all mitzvahs in a beautiful way. Every time we do a mitzvah, we're sort of praising the Ribbono Shel Olam. But when it comes to Hallel, which is actually, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, which is actually a form of Hallel, so then we have this special halacha of Ne'ima that it should be sung. And we can't actually sing that we're having to sing the Neiris Chanukah, but we make them beautiful. We don't just like one there, but we have many Neiris, and many as there are people in the house, and we have additional Neiris for each passing day in order that we have one candle. We have a panoply of lights, we make it beautiful. And that makes it Ne'ima, that makes it a melodious, quote unquote, a melodious kind of Ner Chanukah. And that shows that Ner Chanukah is in fact a form of Shir. Maybe I'll add parenthetically, we're not talking about Pesach, but I think it's very striking. You have a similar idea of Ne'ima when it comes to Pesach. Pesach by night, we stay over the Haggadah in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Ritva writes in his commentary on the Haggadah that the Haggadah should be said to Ne'ima. It should be sung. That's why we sing Avodah Mayinu, and so we sing some songs during the Haggadah. It's also not just something that we do because the Ritva says it's halacha. The Haggadah should be set in the Ima. Why? Because telling over the Surah Yetzias Mitzrayim every day of the year, there's a mitzvah to say over to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Like Kriyishma, we say Yetzias. That's why we have a third parsha of Kriyishma, to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. So why do we have another mitzvah Pesach by night to say Yetzias Mitzrayim? So the Mepharshim explain. Every day of the year, there's a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Yetzias Mitzrayim is the foundation of Emunah. We want to remember that Yetzias Mitzrayim happened. But Pesach by night is the night we actually went out of Mitzrayim. Then we're saying over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim as a form of Hallel v'Hoydoyah. So if it's a form of Hallel v'Hoydoyah, then it has to be said as a Hallel, and the Haggadah itself is a form of. We actually have Hallel as part of the Haggadah too, but the whole Hallel is a form of Hallel v'Hoydoyah. That's what's different about Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim Pesach by night and Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim the whole year round. And if the whole Haggadah should be said, we have this notion of Ne'ima that informs every time we have a Hallel, it also has to be, there has to be B'Ne'ima. So basic, but the Haggadah we say B'Ne'ima, Hallel and Shul we say B'Ne'ima, every time we say Hallel we say B'Ne'ima, and I'm adding the Chanukah also, we light the Neiris Chanukah B'Ne'ima, meaning in this idea that we make them beautiful. And I think there's a very, I can bring you a proof to this notion, that Hallel is connected, or mitzvahs that have to do with Hallel have a special concept of Hillel. Because there is one other mitzvah, besides Ner Chanukah, there is one other mitzvah where Hiddur plays a special role. Anybody know what that is?
Decorating the sukkah.
I think decorating the sukkah is just an example of lulav noah, talis noah, sukkah noah. That goes into the general idea of. But if you don't decorate the sukkah is fine. The sukkah is not possible. That's just that is the general parameters of Hiddur. But you're not far up. You're in the right yontif. Dalad Minim, the lulav, the esrog, and so on. There they have this special lulav holder because the Torah calls the esrog pre eitz holder, the beautiful fruit. The Gemara derives that from the esrog we extend that concept to all of the four minim. There's a special lulav by an esrog that by every other mitzvah, if it's not beautiful, it's not beautiful. So you have a not beautiful. Okay, you know, your sefer Torah wasn't so beautiful. You feel it not so beautiful. As long as they're kosher, it's not the best way, but it's fine. But an esrog, if it doesn't reach a certain threshold of holder, it's possible. Likewise, a lulav and a rova. That's why if the pitum. One of the reasons why if the pitum falls off an esrog, it's problematic is because debate what the problem is. But one opinion is because it lacks an hodl. The esrog is supposed to look like it's supposed to have a pitum. It takes away from the beauty of the esrog. That's another mitzvah where we find that that over and above the general concept of zekei levan meil, there's a special idea of hodar that's associated with the mitzvah dalad minim, and it's actually in the name. The esrog is called creates hodar because of this notion that it has to be beautiful. So why is that? So, and that's what's why it is, because it says in Tosafot that way, but I think it fits in very well to the scheme, because the mitzvah dalad minim also has a special connection to Hallel, because that's the one we take in Hallel. You know, you're not allowed to take a mitzvah. You know, you're allowed to take something in your hand during Hallel. Like Shemoneh Esrei, you're not supposed to be carrying except for a siddur that you need to read. You're not supposed to be walking around during Hallel carrying something in your hand or doing some other activity. And yet, in the middle of Hallel, we take the dalad minim and we shake the dalad minim. How does the dalad minim come into the middle of Hallel? And the answer is, it says already in Rishonim, it says already, it's alluded to in Chazal in the Medrash, that the dalad minim are the mitzvah of taking the dalad minim is connected to Hallel. The Torah says, "So l'kachem l'chem yom rishon peis vado smachem l'fei Hashem l'kechem shivas yom." We rejoice with Dalim, and the Rosh brings the Medrash that applies to the mitzvah Dalim. The pasuk Oz Yiranenu Atzeyar, that the trees of the forest burst forth in song, and the shaking of the lulav. That's a form of Oz. That's what the pasuk means. Oz Yiranenu Atzeyar, and therefore the shaking of the lulav is part and parcel of the saying of Halal. And so I think this fits in very well to this scheme, that because Dalet Minim also is a mitzvah of Halal, that's what makes it. In fact, we talked about you mentioned before about an aroba that was dried out, and the Mishnah says if an aroba was dried out, it's pasul. So why is it pasul? So the Ravid, what the Ravid says, the reason why a dried out aroba is pasul is because the pasul says lo yahamesim yahalaluka, that an aroba that's desiccated can't say halal. So you see that the aroba is supposed to be saying halal. That's why it's desiccated. Lo yahamesim yahalaluka, and it's not able to say halal. So you see, this is clear in many halachos that the dalet minim are connected to halal as well, and I think that really strengthens this equation that I'm making. Whenever you have a mitzvah, these special mitzvahs that have a connection to halal, they have a special connection as well to hidden mitzvah. So sukkah has to have hidden mitzvah, and that's the lulav, dalet minim. They have to have three eights of dough. They have to be beautiful because it's oziran l'atzei hayar, and a mitzvah of halal has to be beautiful because that's the equivalent of ne'imah. It has to be melodious. So therefore, the mitzvah has to be done in a beautiful way. The same thing applies to the Ner Chanukah. The Chanukah also, because the Ner is a form of, because the Hadlokas and Ner is a form of Pirsum and Yisro, it's a form of Halal, so it has to be done melodiously. So we want to do every mitzvah, we should try to do nicely. But the Ner Chanukah in particular, we have to do the mitzvah in the most beautiful way that we can, in order to fulfill this notion of Unerayim Mashmai, Unerayim Mashmai Yachdom. But to add to this, why is it that especially on Sukkot and on Hanukkah, we have this mitzvah of halalness? I think we have halal in every Yom, but we have halal. But we don't have mitzvahs that are special halal mitzvahs. When it comes to Sukkot, we have a special mitzvah to say halal, not just to say halal, but to actually do mitzvahs that are going to be part of our halal. And Hanukkah also, we have a special mitzvah, not just to say halal, we say halal in Hanukkah, but to do a special halakhah's neir is to have some more than the usual halal, to have halal that's not much called, it's mitzvah to mind. We don't just say halal, but we do halal, we experience halal. We do an act of halal, we share our halal with the whole world, our lights we share with the whole world. What is it about these two occasions, Sukkot and Hanukkah, that makes the imperative of halal so much stronger by these occasions than we find even by other Yom HaTovim? And what do they have in common with each other? I think the answer, I believe, is that Sukkot is the most joyous of all the Yom HaTovim. It's on Sukkot that it says, "Usmachtem fnei Hashem lokechem v'yisach sameach." And we say even in davening, "Yom Chag Sukkot is Zman Simchaseinu." Every Yom Tov we're happy, but Sukkot is especially Zman Simchaseinu. So Mefarshim explained that why was Sukkot so much more especially the time of Simcha, because Sukkot represents coming back to being close to the Ribbono Shel Olam after having been estranged. We had the Chatei Egel. We lost that on the Yakovod. Yom Kippur, Kadosh Baruch Hu forgave us. The famous Vilna Gaon who explains why we have Sukkot after Yom Kippur. Why do we have Sukkot in the springtime? When we went out of Mitzrayim, that's when we sat in the Sukkot. So the Vilna Gaon explains famously, it's not the first one, it already has sources in Targum and very early sources. But the reason why Sukkot is after Yom Kippur is because when we did the Chet HaEgel, we lost the Anol Yakovod. And we were estranged from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and then he forgave us in Yom Kippur. Moshe Rabbeinu came down, he told us to start rebuilding, to build the Mishkan. For 3 days we gathered all the wherewithal to build the Mishkan. And then on Tesvav Tishrei, we commenced with the construction of the Mishkan, and that's when the Anol Yakovod came back. And therefore, Sukkot represents the coming back to being close to the Ribbono Shel Olam after having been estranged, and that's the greatest Simcha. The greatest Simcha is the Kiruv that comes after the Richuk, after having thought that it's all over. We're on a high, and it's over, it's gone, we lost it. And now the Ribbono Shel Olam brought us back, that's the greatest, that's a special Simcha. Over and above, we have all the other Yom HaTovim, also Simcha, but this is especially acute, especially poignant Simcha. I think Hanukkah is the same idea. But Hanukkah also, that was the first one, that was, at Hanukkah, we thought that it's all over. The Jewish people were assimilating. Most of the Jewish people had gone over and had been seduced by the Hellenistic culture, were estranged from Yahdus, as we know from the historical sources. And now Hanukkah, and the Beis HaMikdash had been desecrated, Like, what is the end of the story? Finish the Tavano, it's, you know, that's it. The connection is over. And now the Rebbeinu came, by Chanukah, the Rebbeinu brought us back. We were able to rededicate the Beis HaMikdash, and we found that not everything was contaminated. There was a Pach Shemen, but we were able to have the come back to having the connection with the Rebbeinu Shalom. That, like Sukkot, that's the Simcha, the Kiruv, that came after having had the Rechum. And that's an especially great Simcha, and therefore the Chiyuv of Hallel and Sukkot, and the Chiyuv of Hallel and Chanukah, this is a special Chiyuv of Hallel, more than you have by any other. That can't suffice itself with the regular halal, but it has to find expression in mitzvahs of halal, mitzvahs of dalaminim, and mitzvahs of nechanek, and so on, that we do as beautifully as we can, because we want to show this outpouring of feeling and emotion that we have. It should be beautiful, it should be melodious, and that way we express our thanks to the Rebbeinu Shalom for promising us that even at a time when we think that we're far away, we think that it's all over, that it's lost, that so many of the Jewish people have been lost, and now it's just going to go downhill. The Rebbeinu Shalom brought us back, brings us back, and that was what we celebrate by Chanukah. That's what Doris, that's as well. Chanukah is the paradigm of Doris, that even though there are times when the relationship between Chai Yisrael and the Jewish people becomes problematic, becomes fractious, when many of the Jewish people seem to be lost to Yahavus, but we have that hope that the Rebbeinu Shalom, finds ways to bring Klal Yisrael back. We see in our own time how so many Jews have come back after seven many generations of attrition, and that simcha of Kiruv HaCharichim, the Chanukah is the harbinger of, and that simcha is something that Tosi Molis Chikim, that simcha that fills our heart up in such a way that it can't even suffice with the halal. We have to express it in all different kinds of ways.